the Honorable Justice of the United States Court of Appeals, in and for the Seventh Judicial Circuit, hearing. All persons having business before this honorable court are admonished to draw near and give their attention as the court is now sitting. God save the United States and this honorable court.
Good morning, ladies and gentlemen. Our first case for argument this morning is General Auto Service against Chicago. Mr. Baltz.
Good morning. May it please the court, my name is Tom Baltz, and I represent the appellants in this action, plaintiffs below. The primary issue before this court is whether the Younger abstention doctrine mandated a dismissal of plaintiff's claims, as the district court concluded, despite the fact that, one, plaintiffs were not parties to any related state court action, two, plaintiffs were denied leave in their petition to participate in the related state court action at issue, and three, the state court order denying plaintiffs leave to intervene was not a final and appealable order. Plaintiffs submit to this court that the requisite elements for invoking the Younger abstention doctrine were not present in this case, and further maintain that the district court's dismissal of this action pursuant to the Younger abstention doctrine therefore should be reversed and remanded to the district court for further proceedings on the merits of plaintiff's claims. Now, this court has repeatedly held that applying Younger has three basic elements. A federal district court will abstain from jurisdiction if, one, the federal action is filed during the pendency of a state proceeding, two, the proceeding involves important governmental interests, and three, most importantly for purposes of this appeal, the state proceeding provides plaintiff with an adequate opportunity in which to assert the federal claims at issue. In this case, that third element simply was not met. As stated, the plaintiffs...
Why didn't you appeal from the denial of the motion for leave to intervene?
Well, Your Honor, it was a decision we discussed with our clients. The order that was entered by Judge Durkin in the Cook County Circuit Court was not a final and appealable order. It had not been given...
What Illinois case do you rely on for the proposition that one cannot appeal from the denial of a motion for leave to intervene? You can certainly appeal from such a denial in federal court.
Your Honor, it falls under Illinois Supreme Court Rule 304. I do know that there is Illinois case law. I know that it was recognized by the federal district courts for the Northern District in Illinois and Fernandez.
I want state decisions. Do you have any state decision to cite?
Not off the top of my head, Your Honor. I do not. If it may be helpful, I do know that in interpreting Illinois law, the Hernandez case, a 1978 Northern District of Illinois case, cited the specific Illinois Supreme Court rule, Rule 304, the rule that that involves a certification of non-appealable orders and makes them final and appealable, and that district court panel specifically acknowledged that without 304 certification, an order is not final and appealable if it does not dispose with all of the matters in the case. But I think those two points, the fact that my clients were not parties to the state court action, and two, my clients were denied leave to intervene in that state court action, are the two salient facts which show that Younger cannot apply in this case. On a related matter, the district court seemed to find in its order of dismissal, and certainly the city of Chicago has argued, that plaintiffs had a duty to exhaust state court remedies before coming to federal court. More specifically, I think the argument is that my clients had a duty to appeal that state court denial of the petition to intervene. Again, what is important to note here in the facts of this case, the order denying intervention was not a final and appealable order, and the federal district court panel in Hernandez found that that was a salient factor in determining that Younger should not apply. The fact that it has been argued that intervention was an appeal of the denial of intervention was a necessary step, it also goes against this court's holding in the Hoover v. Wagner case. And specifically, that case, like this case, involved a situation in which the plaintiff in the federal action filed his lawsuit during a pending state court action. Like this lawsuit, the plaintiff in Hoover was not a plaintiff in that state court action. Under those circumstances, this court refused to uphold the district court dismissal based on Younger, although it upheld the dismissal on another basis.
Were the parties in that case in privity with each other?
I don't believe there was an allegation that they were in privity with one another.
Their relationship was fundamentally different than the relationship in this case.
That, in that sense, Your Honor, yes, except we would argue, and we do argue, that we are not in privity.
I know, but assuming that you are, isn't that a fundamental difference?
It is a difference. I don't think it is a determinative difference. And I still think that this court's opinion in Hoover is rather telling on this issue, because this court stated that nothing in Younger, or the case following it, suggests that persons claiming a violation need to seek out an existing state court action in which they might join. And it has nothing to do, the court stated, there's a limited duty regarding exhaustion of state judicial remedies, but this court stated that is not a duty to intervene, and it has no application to a challenge to a statute or an ordinance.
Perhaps I'm misunderstanding the burden of my colleague's question, but it's one that troubles me too, and one would ordinarily think that this comes under the heading of claim preclusion. Your privy has litigated in state court and lost. Why isn't your suit precluded, quite independent of Younger?
Well, Your Honor, I would answer that in a fashion that we contend that although Whiteco was the tenant of FAY properties, in this particular instance, they should not be considered in privity or are privity.
Let's assume that we think that a landlord and a tenant are in privity, especially when they're trying to litigate the very same issues about the very same parcel of property. Now, so where does that leave us in terms of the law of preclusion?
Well, that's an awfully big presumption, Your Honor. I think the case law is pretty clear that if we're talking about the same cause of action, that parties in privity can be precluded by prior state court actions. I would say that in this instance, that this court has chosen not to proceed. If I might find the case, the Bickham case has held that in situations...
I don't want to stop you from citing federal decisions, but again, the question about the scope of preclusion is one of state law under 28 U.S.C. 1738.
Yes.
So in order to figure out what the effect of preclusion is, we need to figure out what the state courts have to say about this.
I would say that if this court presupposes or assumes for purposes of the question that we are in privity for purposes of res judicata purposes, we have a difficult hurdle. I think our argument boils down to that Illinois law, given the Progressive Land Developers case, Illinois Supreme Court case, given the Boyd Illinois Appellate Court case, does not favor the term privity any longer. The Restatement of Judgments, Section 42, says that the preferred modern approach is not to look at parties in privity, but for purposes of, at least for claim preclusion and res judicata, the more modern approach, the more defendable approach, is one which actually looks at whether the interests are being represented. If that's an answer to your question, Your Honor.
1738 says we have to give the judgment entered in the state court the same preclusive effect that the state court itself would give it. So my burden of my question about authority is, which, if you say Illinois has abandoned the idea of privity or something like that, what case do you point us to?
I would point you to the Progressive Land Developers case, which is an Illinois Supreme Court case. I would further point this court to the 4th District Appellate Court case of Illinois, the Boyd case, and the other cases cited therein. Both of those cases have cited to the Restatement Second of Judgments, which expressly abandons the traditional notion of privity and really looks to a case-by-case analysis of where these parties stand and whether party one is actually representing the interests of the other party. And in this case, this court can look to the decision denying administrative review to WIPCO by the State Circuit Court, where it repeatedly cites to the lack of evidence set forth by WIPCO in support of the most basic of claims. And we also have as part of the record that although some hand-waving mention of constitutional claims was made, no argument was ever presented in support of those claims in front of the Zoning Board of Appeals. No argument whatsoever in the memorandum of law filed by WIPCO in front of the state Cook County Circuit Court. I would like to reserve the remainder of my time for rebuttal.
Mm-hmm.
Thank you.
Certainly, Mr. Maltz. Ms. Dunning.
May it please the court. The lessee had contracted to place a sign on General Auto's property, has already litigated the question whether it had the right to obtain a sign permit. General Auto's suit also concerns the same right of that lessee to obtain a sign permit. For two reasons, the dismissal should be affirmed. First, on the Younger issue. Whenever a litigant fails to exhaust a state court appellate remedy, Younger applies. Here, there's no question that General Auto had a state court appellate remedy.
It didn't have an appellate remedy on the merits.
It had an appellate remedy on
it. Told it couldn't intervene and refused to entertain its arguments on the merits. Indeed, one would think that almost by definition, Younger is inapplicable when the litigant goes to the state court, asks the state court to entertain its claims, and the state court says, go away. We won't hear you out on the merits.
Well, a similar situation was presented in Sekeres. I believe an attorney disciplinary matter or something, and they had brought constitutional arguments in front of the the board that they were supposed to bring it in front of, and the board said, we won't hear these arguments, and then this court said, no, you have to go back. You should appeal that, because you can appeal the fact that they would not hear your arguments. Here we have a similar situation where they could appeal it. You know, they could definitely appeal it at the end of judgment. Illinois state law is clear on that. They could appeal that they were not allowed to intervene. Furthermore, while General Auto...
Is it clear that they could not have intervened as an interlocutory matter?
Well, we believe that Mr. Heary would have been entitled to intervene, but the corporation is a separate entity from him, and we think that his request for intervention would fall under ordinary Illinois state rules, that a party with an interest in litigation would be allowed to intervene unless its interest is adequately represented in the litigation by another party. And here, because we believe that General Auto was in privity with White Cove, that they...
Well, that's a question of whether you think the state trial court was in error or not on the intervention motion.
Mm-hmm.
But what about right. The issue of interlocutory appeal? Could either the corporation or the individual have taken an interlocutory appeal under state practice?
They could have attempted to take one. It would not have been as of right.
Well, you can always attempt, but I mean, what does the law say about whether you have a right to take that? The law permits that intervention.
Yes,
that appeal.
The law permits an interlocutory appeal in that situation, and the law clearly allows it to be appealed after final judgment, of course. Anything that could have been appealed in an interlocutory appeal can be appealed.
Is there Illinois authority for the opportunity to take an interlocutory appeal?
Yes, we cited that in our brief.
So you just think your colleague simply misread the law?
I'm sorry?
Well, your colleague indicated that he had advised his client that it was there was no right of interlocutory appeal under state practice, and therefore they couldn't take one.
There was no right of interlocutory appeal. It wouldn't have been an interlocutory appeal of right, but it would have been an interlocutory appeal of discretion, where the court could take such an appeal.
I see. You'd have to ask for leave.
Right.
Would they have to petition to intervene at the Supreme Court or whenever at the end of the case, since they haven't been a party?
I think their only place in this litigation would be to appeal the denial of intervention. So at that point...
You said something about at the end, once the case is decided...
At final judgment.
Then they could, appeal something?
They could appeal the denial of their motion.
Ms. Stein, if I could stay with it younger, but move to another facet of it for a moment, is... how important is privity in terms of one being bound by the actions of the person with whom you're in privity under the Younger Doctrine? It seems to be very well established with respect to res judicata,
right.
But the cases don't really talk about privity very much in the Younger context. Do the same standards apply, or do we use some other kind of standard to determine the relationship of two parties under the Younger Doctrine?
Well, in this case, we believe that in terms of applying Younger, that privity is not necessary because they had the appellate remedy through their denial of their motion to intervene. And so it's not dependent on whether they were in privity. The res judicata argument, of course, is, and we do believe that they were in privity.
No. Just put to one side for a moment the right, the contingent right, if you want, to appeal the intervention. If we just look at it as a matter of the relationship of the parties, what is it about the relationship of the lessor and the lessee that makes the lessor bound or subject to the Younger Doctrine in this case?
You mean as the district court applied Younger as opposed to our argument?
Yeah.
Okay. Obviously we've argued in our brief that it's res judicata that applies now, but mm-hmm. In terms of Younger, it's clear that parties that are in an interrelationship such as this should be applied, Younger, but
why?
As I said, we didn't brief this issue.
But you do want us to sustain the district court's view on Younger. But you're resting entirely on the intervention motion.
And on the res judicata issue.
And on the res judicata.
Right.
Let me come back to the intervention. What was Chicago's position on intervention in the state court?
I believe the city opposed it. We opposed it. We opposed it.
You opposed it. Things get very curious, don't you? Don't they? You say that they should have appealed within the state system, but on your view, the denial of intervention was correct.
Right.
Why is it that Chicago thinks that they had to appeal a correct decision?
Well, Huffman says clearly that it doesn't matter whether you think that your appeal will be successful.
The question I'm asking now is not what your opponent thinks, but what you think. What you're asking us to say is that Younger bars a case in which the state court not only refused to hear the party's arguments, but did so correctly. But the state court was correct in refusing to hear the party's arguments.
Right.
In your view.
Right. I think it's because, it is because in this case, the parties are in privity, and that's the reason. But in any case, no matter whether they're in privity or not, when there's an appellate remedy, then they need to go after it. And it's clear from the case law.
An appellate remedy is something you use when there was an incorrect decision by a trial court. If everybody agrees the trial court was correct, what's the point of an appeal? Right? If as a matter of state law they were in fact not entitled to intervene, and that's been determined correctly by the trial court, and in your view that's exactly what happened, what's the point of an appeal?
Well, I think that the reason that this becomes confusing is because they had no, because they were in privity, and because they had no right to bring these claims on their own in federal court or anywhere else, because they were in privity with a litigant who was already pursuing their interests.
Right. I understand that argument. It may be right or wrong, but it seems to me the further argument that they had to appeal, that they had to proceed themselves, is hard to reconcile with your own position. And a litigant doesn't have to make all possible arguments. It should confine itself to the arguments that are sustainable.
It's clear from the case law that the application of Younger through this Huffman doctrine is not dependent on that, and the reason is because, you know, in this case, we think it's a little clearer because there's a privity issue, but in another case where there's a question that the federal court is not in a position and should not be in a position under several of its doctrines to pass judgment on whether or not the state court correctly applied its own laws. And
exactly. We assume that state courts correctly applied their own laws, and that's why we assume, as you indeed are arguing,
right,
that the denial of intervention was correct. And if the denial of intervention was correct, it's very hard to make the Younger claim, except indirectly through the privity argument.
Right. It's an alternative argument that we've made, and if I may, I'd like to go on to the res judicata argument. On res judicata, we have 3 points. First, res judicata, of course, applies both to arguments that were raised and those that could have been raised. Second, under Illinois law, the privity inquiry asks only if the interests are aligned. Progressive Land Developers makes this clear. In this case, the interests are completely concurrent. Both Whiteco and General Auto seek to have a sign permit issued to Whiteco. And third, General Auto's argument that there can be no preclusion as to arguments not made by Whiteco would abolish res judicata in Illinois in cases of privity. There's nothing in Illinois law that indicates that only collateral estoppel and not res judicata applies to parties in privity. We urge this court to affirm the district court's dismissal of General Auto's complaint.
Mm-hmm.
Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Dunning. Anything further, Mr. Bowles?
Yes,
Your Honor, in answer to, in hopefully further answer to your prior question, our case has clarified the Harris Trust case, a 1978 Illinois appellate court case cited by the defendants. And in that case, what the Harris Trust Court found was that under Illinois law, an order denying a motion to intervene is not immediately appealable. And in that specific case, the trial court's order denying intervention only became final and appealable by reason of a subsequent Rule 304 certification by the trial court some 4 months after the order denying intervention had been entered. Related to that point of the fact that the order denying intervention was not immediately appealable, the Hernandez case found that point very relevant to the issue of whether a case can properly fall under Younger. And that court held that, quote, since certification of an interlocutory appeal is discretionary and denial of thereof is not appealable, Illinois Supreme Court rules 304 and 308 also do not provide plaintiffs with a meaningful opportunity to appeal any adverse ruling. A meaningful opportunity...
Assuming that there is no entitlement as of right to appeal immediately, there are still two opportunities. One is to request leave to appeal, which I gather you didn't do. And the other is to appeal from the final decision, which your client most certainly didn't do.
That is true, Your Honor. But ultimately, that is not something that is required under Younger. We have asserted that by advancing that position, this court, as the trial court, would have to find an extreme duty on the part of plaintiffs to, one, suspend the pursuit of their federal claims and wait for the non-appealable state court order to become final and appealable, assuming there was no 304 certification, upon the final disposition of the state court action to then appeal such order and otherwise exhaust the appellate court process, and assuming success to then actually assert the federal claims for the first time when the case is finally remanded back to the state court. And it's our position that Younger simply is not that broad. Thank you, Your Honor.
The case will be taken under advisement.